I always tell everyone to basically install, if you can say that, but set up Google Search Console. And Google Search Console is a free tool provided by Google, and it's basically your gateway into see how your website is performing on Google. And this is a gold mine for keyword research because you will see all the keywords that your website is ranking for. And often you will find keywords that you haven't even thought of writing content for in there, but Google found it remotely related to your website. And that's why they showed that your website on that keyword. So that's definitely one tool. A paid tool, which is super simple, is a tool called KeySearch. And it's super cheap. I think it costs $17 per month or something like that. And it completely replaces Ahrefs and SEMrush.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte. If you love eavesdropping on grateful entrepreneurs who are making this world a better place, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave your groovy review. Today, I'm joined by SEO virtuoso, Philip Stemmen. Philip's passion for SEO blends technical expertise with a love for content, creating a dynamic approach. Philip generously shares his wealth of knowledge through engaging and insightful YouTube videos. He is committed to helping others navigate the intricacies of SEO, fostering a community of learning. Philip's innovative SEO experience and valuable insights are a treasure trove for anyone seeking to elevate their SEO game. Welcome, Philip.
Whoa, what an intro. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So tell us your story. How did you become an SEO virtuoso?
Oh yeah, that's a great, great question. Because I've always been a curious mind. So ever since I think I started when I was 13, I just started fizzling around with programming. I was like adding some different things into different programming files, and that's how it all started. It started with programming the technical side and later transitioned into SEO. And I was simply amazed by how you could write some text in a file and it became something visual. And that turned into a website. And then you need to figure out how do you get traffic to a website? Oh, there's something called SEO. And then through that way, I slowly transitioned into SEO, even though I work with programming for a lot of years. But in the recent years, I've went full on SEO, and that's what I'm doing today. And it's incredible to be able to do what you love every single day. I simply love it.
So SEO has changed a lot in the 25 years since I started digital marketing. And I'm just going to throw this out here at the beginning of the interview and make it interesting. The other day, I watched a video on YouTube, and it said to stop that SEO would become that SEO in 2024 is changing because of AI, and that if you wanted to stay ahead of the game, that you should stop writing blog posts and start posting videos on YouTube. How do you feel about that?
Definitely, I completely agree. It's
oh,
it's a
well,
huge
there you have
part
it.
of
That's
it.
the end of the episode,
Yeah.
ladies and
Thank you,
gentlemen.
guys.
We'll see you next time.
Oh no, but I completely agree. And but it's a supplement. It's not like replacing the content part of SEO. Videos is great because it shows real life experience, expertise, and you see a real person that you connect with. And another part is also that after the recent helpful content update we got in the end of last year that simply crushed so many websites, you need to build a brand, and creating videos is part of building a brand. And that's why it's so fruitful to make these YouTube videos. But you need to see it as a supplement. It's also the same. For example, I was optimizing one of my blog posts the other day. And when I optimize a blog post, I check in the search results on Google, what are other people doing on this specific search term? And a lot of times they have a video or something similar, which is an element that just shows a lot of extra personality experience. And that's why they often rank higher. So that's why video is just an incredible tool to show your experience, who you are, and make your content better. So definitely get started on video if you haven't already.
So what I know about video, and I'm not an SEO expert by any means. I got lucky back in the early 2000s, but what I know about video is this. I created some videos 10 years ago that people still watch on YouTube every day.
It's
10
incredible,
years ago.
right?
10 years ago. Do they visit my website
incredible.
For that topic every day? No, but they watch. The video gets views every day. And there's a handful of them from 10 years ago. The videos get views every day. it's one or two or three or maybe, you know, 20. It's not like I'm getting thousands of views every day, but somebody watches one of those videos every day.
That's awesome.
From 10 years ago.
It's simply awesome. Like okay, evergreen content in that sense is just like incredible.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking to an audience of micropreneurs. Explain what evergreen means.
Yes. So evergreen is content that will be able to perform for many years to come. So it's not trending topics. It's topics that they're here to stay basically, and they will just continue to be able to be topics that you can read about and they're relevant.
Excellent. I love that. Okay, so let's talk about your social media content, because it's you practice what you preach. What possessed you to get into this I mean, you're a content creator. I've stalked you. You've got videos. So what possessed you to do it that way?
Definitely. Great question. I just want to help. I literally just want to help people. I want them to realize that this mystic SEO is not as difficult as some make it to be. And that's what I feel I'm in the world for. I just want to help people. I want to share what is working for me and that people can do it themselves, whether they try themselves throughout my guides or I help them do it or whatever it is. That's the purpose of everything I do. I just want to help, and I don't want to gatekeep or anything. I just want to share my knowledge and everything that I work on and that I know works. So that's what it's all about for me.
You know, that's a business model that people like Gary Vaynerchuk have been shouting from the rooftops. Just share what you know and everything else will just fall into place. Sometimes it takes sometimes it does take a couple of years. So it's patience. You have to be patient, right? It's not, I had a plumber many, many years ago tell me that it took him 30 years to become an overnight success.
Exactly. I love that. I love when people say that. It's I love it.
So let's talk about SEO. Again, your audience is micropreneurs, and some of them might not understand. Some people might think it's, you know, some people might think that social media is all they need. So in baby step language, as if you were explaining it to a kindergartner, what is SEO?
All right. Let me see how I can.
I've never asked that question to anyone before. I can't wait to hear this answer.
Yeah, I need to think. Let me see. So SEO stands for search engine optimization. And SEO if I can say in very broad terms, is content that you're optimizing to rank on Google. So when you go on Google and you search a term, let's say that you're buying a new couch and you want to analyze, research a bit on that couch, then you go and search the couch and then maybe the word review, and then you get a bunch of results. First, you see some advertisement results, and those are just Google ads. That has nothing to do with SEO. But then you see what's called organic results, and these results are websites. And this is what SEO is all about. SEO is all about writing content that will rank for specific searches on Google. And the higher you rank, automatically, the more clicks you get to your website. And within SEO and writing content, there are a million things to do. But in broad terms, that's what SEO is about. Then, let's see. Then if you want to get started with SEO and you want to do the simple terms of SEO, the simple things of SEO, then of course you need a website and you need content. You need to figure out what your website needs to be about. Of course, it's about your services and about what it is that you sell. And then you need to figure out what your industry and your niche is. And then based on that, you need to do something called keyword research. And keyword research is basically where you try and figure out what people are searching for on Google within your industry. And then you will get a lot of searches. For example, if you have, take the plumber as an example. When you're a plumber, you're fixing a lot of different things. You have some different services that you provide. And within those services, people, they have questions. And people, they go to Google and they search for these questions. And that's where you want to be. You want to be able to answer those questions through content. And the easier and the better your content is overall, the higher you will rank automatically. And just one tip here, and that is when you start writing, let's say you've done your keyword research and you have found a question within your industry, and you think now it's time to write a piece of content answering this question. You need to answer that question as fast as possible in that content piece. Put it at the top of the content, because people, they want a fast answer. If you think of content as you want them to read the entire piece of content and then you answer in the bottom, that's completely wrong. People, they'll get a bad experience with your website and they will leave your website and go to the competition. Simply answer immediately. And when you've written your piece of content and you've put it out there, then you simply wait and see how it performs. Do you get any clicks? And that's the process you repeat over and over again. I think that's to put it in simple terms.
Let's talk about that content. So
yeah,
back in the day, I'm coming at this from, and I'm, it's a lot of this is curiosity too, because I need to catch up. I have not been keeping up with SEO. So back in the day, you were supposed to write at least 1,000 or 1,500 words in a blog post, and you need to have some sort of TLDR and some sort of FAQ in every single freaking blog post. Is that still true?
I would say both yes and no. That's the difficult part. Yeah, exactly. With SEO, there's this joke that it's the answer is always it depends. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do is you always need to look at the search results already. What are they doing? Do they have an FAQ section? Then unfortunately, you need an FAQ section as well. Are they writing 1,000 words? Then you need to match it more or less. And the reason why you need to do that is because there's something called consensus within Google. So if I can try and do this simple, then Google, they rank website based on hundreds of factors, but one of them is consensus. So that means that Google is looking when they are ranking a new website for the same things that are happening on other websites. So that means that if you're targeting a keyword, then the three, let's say the top three ranking websites on that specific keyword, let's say they're writing 1,000 words, they have an FAQ section, and they're mentioning some specific terms within that question and within your industry, then unfortunately you have to do the same. You have to cover the same subjects because Google then figures out that, okay, you are trustworthy because you cover the same things. And then of course you need to add to it. You need to do it better than the content that's already out there. So again, it depends because sometimes you can also be lucky to rank a piece of content in just a couple of hundred words, but it's super rare because of this consensus.
What happens when you do a little keyword research and you discover that only a couple hundred people a month are looking for that thing, but that's the thing that you want to offer?
Go for it still, because it's so important to remember that when you do keyword research and you get this search volume, you have to remember this is an estimate. There are no tools out there that actually knows how many searches are there on this specific search term. Only Google knows for Google, but Google doesn't count Bing and Yahoo and the other search engines. So for me, if there are 100 searches per month, like if Ahrefs, which is an SEO tool, tells me that there are 100 searches on this specific keyword, then I go for it. Because what you also need to remember is that even though you're writing a piece of content for this specific keyword, then your content will also rank for hundreds of other keywords that also have a certain amount of search volume. So go for it, definitely.
So let's talk about these tools. You mentioned Ahrefs. That's a hard one for me to say. What other tools can you use for search engine or for keyword research? And which ones are the simplest to understand? Because I have used a lot of different SEO tools and keyword tools, and some of them are complicated, and some of them are just really super simple. And honestly, for most people, super simple is where it's at.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So I always tell everyone to basically install, if you can say that, but set up Google Search Console. And Google Search Console is a free tool provided by Google, and it's basically your gateway in to see how your website is performing on Google. And this is a goldmine for keyword research because you will see all the keywords that your website is ranking for. And often you will find keywords that you haven't even thought of writing content for in there, but Google found it remotely related to your website. And that's why they showed that your website on that keyword. So that's definitely one tool. A paid tool, which is super simple, is a tool called KeySearch. And it's super cheap. I think it costs $17 per month or something like that. And it completely replaces Ahrefs and SEMrush. It's such a simple tool and it helps you. Now I'm going to say something that maybe doesn't make a lot of sense, but it helps you build what's called a topical map. And a topical map is basically an overview of all of the topics and the content within your industry that in theory you need to write to become an authority. And within a topical map, you have all your keywords. So a topical map is just keywords, but a step up, like a level up from there.
Okay, so topical maps are something that a lot of folks are doing in ChatGPT.
Yes, correct.
So this tool that you just mentioned, please tell me the name of it again.
Key search.
Key search. So key search is going to do the same thing that maybe ChatGPT is doing, and maybe make it a, give me the advantages of doing it in key search rather than ChatGPT.
Yeah, so ChatGPT is a generic tool, whereas key search is focused on SEO. So ChatGPT has its limitations. It can't just tell you all the keywords that are relevant for a topical map. It will give you the overview, and ChatGPT doesn't know everything. Key search doesn't know everything either, but key search is more SEO focused. So with the keywords you will get within key search are much more related with data and with actual content ranking for it, whereas ChatGPT is using natural languaging to figure out, okay, people might be searching for this specific question, and often ChatGPT is right. But I would say the biggest difference is that key search covers more area than ChatGPT does.
Okay, so let's go back. We touched on this at the very beginning, but let's go back to AI. So AI, I mean, ChatGPT is AI. I'm sure key search is AI. I mean, it's everything is AI. What do you think? I mean, AI is changing faster than the speed of light, right? Every day a new AI thing comes out. I mean, ChatGPT is doing images now. So where do you see this going? I mean, so two episodes ago, I had a brand astrologer on the show, and she said that the next 24 years are going to be full of innovation, and that 2024 especially is going to be full of innovation. Now, I don't know how I feel about astrology, but I think that she might be spot on with this, because AI is just going to, you know, I keep coming back to the year 1900 when the plane was developed, right? The Wright brothers developed the plane, and within 15 years, they were dropping bombs out of it, right? So that is really super fast. I mean, the cell phone came out in 1980 something or another, and within, you know, 10 or 15 years, they made them this little tiny little thing, and they're now better than computers. I mean, when an innovation is there and it's something that's so exciting as AI is, it just happens fast, and the things that can be developed are just things that you and I might not even understand. But since you're in SEO and that this is your domain, what are your predictions or your thoughts on where this is going?
Yeah, it's AI. It's insane. It's like it's developing so fast. I don't know if you've seen the recent model Sora that just came out to generate videos using AI, and they're quite high quality. It's just it's crazy how fast it's developing. It's just like But I think within the next 5 years, and SEO and AI, it's not gonna change that drastically, is my prediction. I think, of course, we'll use AI to generate content, videos, images, and all these things. But I think within 10 years, I think it will change drastically, maybe 15 years. I think we will go from, let's say I have a question, instead of me going to Google and searching for that for an answer for that question, I will simply have a tailored AI that I will ask that question, and they will come with a tailored answer to me. And they know me, so they know how I want the answer and if I want it in a specific way. And I just think that's the thing that's really going to change. We're going to have personalized AI assistants for every specific use case.
Yeah.
So the next thing is then, how is these AI assistants going to get all of their content? Because right now, AI, when everyone generate content, it's content that is summarized. So that means that the content already exists out there. AI can't create new content out of blue thin air. Only we can. I can sit down and I can write some content that's never been on the web before, but an AI can't do that. So if we at some point need to transition fully to AI, they need to solve that problem on how they get content which are not made for humans, unless maybe there will be some model where the AI models, they pay humans to write new content. I don't know, but it's definitely some interesting years to come.
So I don't know if they've rolled it out to everybody, but on my Google results, search results, I already have AI answers at the very top. So when I type a question into Google, what is Sora video, I get an AI generated answer. Which means I'm not going to scroll past that answer to the search results, because I got the answer that I was looking for. So what are we going to do about that?
Exactly. That's search generative experience, and it's not everyone who has it. It's super limited. In Europe, especially, we don't see that all unless we sign up for the beta. And the thing that SEOs are doing already is that they're optimizing their content to be part of those AI answers, because hopefully people will click from those AI answers to the websites if they want more information.
Well,
And
how are you do,
that's
how do you do that?
Of course, there are no guidelines on it because it's so new. But what people are doing is they're using the same technique for featured snippets. So the featured snippet was the thing that was before AI, where you got a quick answer. So the way that people they optimize their content for featured snippets is that they basically form the answer in the same way as the question is. So for example, if the question is how many legs does a horse have? Then the answer would be a horse has four legs. So they use the same wording, and it's the same that they're trying to optimize their content for. But the interesting part with SGE, search generative experience, is that it also needs content. It needs the content from the website owners. And if the website owners are seeing that they don't get any traffic through this SGE, then it doesn't make sense for them to write content because they don't earn on it, and then it will lose its value. So it's really, yeah, it's some interesting years, and I'm very curious on how they're going to solve that.
Which is the point the dude in the video was making about why you should be optimizing for YouTube instead of your website. And I audience, something that you all didn't know is that about 5 or 6 days ago, my website broke. My 25-year-old website broke. So I'm in this process of, do I try to get it back? Do I try to get it fixed? Or do I just focus on YouTube and my podcast? You know, I mean, I'm really at that point where do I really still need a website? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Philip?
Great question. Of course, I don't know your business in and out, but I wouldn't be able to live without a website. That's my way of getting leads. So if you don't need like a way for people to contact you through your website or share specific things, or because you can also do that on social media, but if you need like leads or people needs to be able to buy something or similar things, then you definitely need a website. But otherwise, maybe you could go just with social media. Who knows?
Do you know what I did while we're, I mean, I'm working very closely with my host to figure out how to fix the debacle, right? So what I did was I purchased CandiceRidardi.com because I did not own CandiceRidardi.com, and I created a virtual card, like a virtual business card, and I directed CandiceRidardi to a virtual business card, and it has everything in it that you need to connect with me, including a lead capture form. So right now
Perfect.
that's something I can share until we figure out what to do about my website.
Exactly, yeah, that's perfect.
You know, but and the podcast gratitudegeek.com is working, right? It's the momgeek.com, the website where my business was living. The podcast website is not broken. Anyway, it's just, I'm, you know, 2024 is a year of change and development, and maybe I don't need to have a website that's 25 years old anymore. I don't know. I don't know. I love, so give me some examples of businesses that absolutely need to still have a website, like an actual developed website with a blog.
I
'Cause
would
it
say
might not be
large.
everybody.
No, exactly. I would say, of course, large organizations, they just absolutely need a website for authority. And I'll still say, if you want to somehow drive leads through traffic, you still need a website because you want that content to live on your website. As you said, you can go and build a business website via like a business card, sorry, via other websites. But the problem is just that you don't own the content. So if they close one day, then you need to figure out another solution. So if you want to own your own content and you want to basically have full control on your website and drive organic traffic and hopefully leads through that, then you definitely need a website.
And you know, that is what I've been telling people for years until this happened to me.
We
So
learn every day,
yeah,
right?
we learn every day, and really I don't know what's going to happen. I'll probably get the website back, but I just don't know what's going to happen with the future. I just know that things are changing really fast, and it's time to start thinking differently than we thought last year or 2 years ago, or definitely anything that we thought before 2019 isn't true anymore, right? You know, I have to tell you, you're in Denmark, right?
Correct, yeah.
So I, in the last month or so, I have had interviews or conversations with people on continents all over the world, right? I interact with people from Asia, from Europe, from Australia regularly on Zoom, and I never leave my house, right? South America, the world is so different now, and things are so easy, right? You and I wouldn't be having this conversation without Zoom, right? Without the internet, without technology. You and I would never have even probably been on each other's radar, right? But here we are having this very fascinating conversation about a boring subject.
True.
It's an important subject. So talk about that. Talk about how the world is changing and how SEO can affect your business globally.
Yeah, it's really changing. Also within SEO, and I think the thing that we have seen mostly within SEO, which is also changing a lot, is that people, they can wake up one day and then they have a website with no traffic because Google, they have chosen to do something else. And that's what's so difficult. It's the same goes for social media. They can change their algorithm all of a sudden and then you get no traction at all. And that's why I see more and more businesses, more and more people, they spread out their efforts. So instead of focusing 100% on social media or 100% on Google, then they spread it out. They start a newsletter. They start a podcast. They start being more active on social media. They go through Pinterest. And, you know, they just like spread their efforts out. So if something happened to Facebook, well, then maybe they still have traffic from Pinterest and their newsletter and vice versa. So that's definitely the biggest change that I've seen in the last couple of months, on top of people trying to build a brand instead of just being this blog of content that you could easily do just 2 or 3 years ago, for example.
Well, that's also why it's so important to have a relationship marketing strategy, not just a marketing strategy. I mean, I personally think that it's my relationships are the reason why I'm in business and why I'm like, I might not need a website, because I have very, very strong relationships. I'm very well connected. One of my master skills is I'm able to meet somebody, have a conversation with them and say, hey, would you be interested in meeting somebody who? And usually they say yes. I mean, I very rarely has anybody said, no, I don't want to meet that person, right? So I have created a network of people who all know each other, and that's relationship building and relationship marketing. So I focus and I teach relationship marketing, because that's, you can't, you know, as long as you're a good person and you're not a jerk, right? The relationships are going to, and businesses, large businesses can do this too. Right?
They can.
I don't even drink Coke. I don't drink soft drinks, right? Every once in a while, I'll have a seltzer water, like a flavored seltzer water. Mm-hmm. I don't drink soft drinks anymore. They're just too sweet for my old person list, right? But I still love Coke. I love Coke commercials. I love the Coke brand. I love the Coke, the way Coke makes me feel. I love the happiness of Coke. I am a fan of Coke. I don't have that same affinity for Pepsi. No, right. If somebody would offer me a Pepsi, I'd be like, meh. If somebody offered me a Coke and it hadn't been a while since I'd had one, I'd say sure. Right. But a Pepsi, I would easily say no to. And I feel the same way about Hellman's mayonnaise. You know, so big brands can do this. Do you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree with you. Especially the Coke, like I'm always looking forward to their Christmas ads, right? What are they going to do? What are they come up with? And it's really about personalization, right? That's also another thing I see a lot, people building audiences. And it's the same that I'm trying to do, to build audiences that you can engage with, because it's so valuable. If you get an audience that actually likes you, you can do so much. You can get feedback from them. You can, of course, provide them a lot of value, but it goes both ways. You can really, as long as you are a giving person, you can really, people just give back to you. And that's why, as you say, relationships, but also building an audience is just, it's so valuable on so many levels. If, for example, if you're running, let's say you're a service business and you want to launch a new service, if you've built an audience or you have some relationship, then ask them, send it out and maybe help them price it with you, or help them scope it. How should it be? It's just, it's so valuable. You can't like pay for an audience. It's just like, it's incredible.
Yeah. If you're a small business, your audience doesn't have to be huge. With a couple of hundred people on a mailing list, you can easily have a business that, you know, gives you a living wage, right? It gives you not a living wage, because that's you know, you can have a fabulous business with a very small list. I want to talk about the National Park Service while I'm thinking about it. So in the United States, we have the National Park Service, and the National Park Service is killing it on social media right now. They are hilarious. And I think that honestly, I can't remember when the last time I went to a national park was, because I don't live near one. I used to live near one and we would go all the time. I mean, we always had a national park membership, but now I don't live near one. And so I don't go very often. But now that I'm following the National Park Service on Instagram because they're hilarious, you know, but now that I'm following them, I'm like, oh, when can I go to a national park? How can we figure out how to go to all the national parks? Like, which national parks haven't I been to? And I've become more engaged in the national parks because of this hilarious, very simple social media campaign that the National Park Service is doing. And it's not, they don't post a lot of photos. They just make really cute little jokes that are hilarious. And they always give me, and I can read them really quickly. I mean, I can read them in 2 seconds, have a laugh and make my little heart and move on. Right. So that's an excellent strategy, but it's not SEO because it's not their website, but it does feed into it feeds into their, you know, what, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I wonder how long the waiting list is to get into Yosemite, right? You know, it feeds into, so it's back to what you said earlier. You got to have a presence everywhere, maybe focus on the ones where you think your audience hangs out. But how does somebody who I'm like 180ing this one now, but how does somebody who is a small business owner, a micropreneur, how does somebody that tiny do all of that? I mean, the National Park Service probably has 20 people on their staff, right? For social media.
Exactly.
So how does a solopreneur do something like that?
So the way that I always tell people is to do one thing at a time. And once you feel that you have mastered that thing, then either you're running it on autopilot and it doesn't take that much energy for you, or then you outsource it because you have it so easily done. You have a standard operational procedure for it, and then you get someone to do it on the cheap, as long as it's possible to do via an SOP. That's definitely the best way moving forward.
SOP stands for standard of procedure, right? No.
Yes.
Standard operating yes. procedure.
Exactly.
Every time anybody uses an acronym, I'm like, okay, what's the acronym stand for? Because I do it too. We get so used to, like I knew what an SOP was. It just standard operating procedure didn't come out quickly. But once you understand what that means, then the acronym makes more sense. Okay, go back to teaching somebody your SOP.
Yeah, exactly. So that's also why, even though you're a super small business, you think, I don't need a standard operational procedure. I'm doing it myself. I'm just doing it on the side. But you can't really scale, or you can't really outsource this specific procedure unless you've written it down step by step what it is that you're doing. And the thing is that it also helps yourself, because you will look at this standard operational procedure and you will tell yourself, can I automate some of this? Is there something I can do better? What about this step here, finding these images? Can I do something else instead? So you're also helping yourself, not only optimizing that procedure, but by optimizing that procedure, you also optimize your business. So the way that I always tell people, as I say, is to do one thing at a time and become really good at that thing, and then either automate it or outsource it, and then you move on to the next thing. And it doesn't have to be that upscale. It's not like you have to post on social media every single day. You can do it a couple of times a week, as long as it makes sense. And then just test, like try 100 different things and then see what works best for your audience. Because some might work good for me, but it will most definitely not work for your audience, for example. So it's really important to test and figure out what's working. And then see, you can always get some inspiration from others, but you really need to figure out how to do it your own way also. Because, for example, I've seen a lot of YouTubers, and you have probably as well, try to copy Mr. Beast, for example, and they can't really do it because he's just him. He's unique in the way that he do the things. So you need
How many people have a budget like Mr. Beast has now where can give someone, I'll give you $10,000 if you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly, yeah. It's all about doing it in your own way. That's definitely super important.
Yeah. And I want to go back to those videos that I made 10 years ago where I'm sitting at my desk with my garbage, my piles of work behind me, you know, and I'm just talking into the microphone.
Exactly.
And every day somebody watches one of those videos.
Exactly,
So.
yeah. And that's also the thing you need to remember, that the thing that's unique about you is you. You are the unique thing about you. So always be yourself in the way that you communicate. Don't try to be someone else.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. I would love to know what, because you talk about all the things that you give away, but how do you actually make money in SEO?
Definitely. I do services. So I have this thing that I always give away, but I also tell people that if they don't want to do it themselves, then contact me and then I will help you. I will do it. And then of course that's the way that I make money. So I help clients do everything within SEO, whether it's content strategy, analysis, technical analysis, all these different things within SEO. So that's the way that I do it.
Do you write articles, or do you give them the list of articles to write?
It's very rare that my clients want me to write the content. It's often that I give them the articles because they often have a procedure already on how they write content. Then maybe I go in and then I tell them how to optimize it and do it better, but it's super rare that I do it.
But you can give them, like, here are 10 or 20 or 100 things that you should be writing about.
Yeah, exactly. Often I create a topical map as we discussed earlier. And then when you create a topical map, often you have already written about a lot of the subjects, but then they can also see what they're missing to write about. And then slowly we're connecting the dots. So that's the way that we do it.
So let's talk about the way that you organize the blog. I mean, because most of the, when we talk, when you're talking about content, you're talking about blog posts. So how do
Yes.
you organize your blog in the way that the topical map is telling you? Like, okay, so let's just say that the topic is cats, since this, I have this a cat right now that's being annoying, right?
Yes.
Hello, hello, annoying cat, right? So let's just say that the topic is cats, and then we create a
Yes.
topical map about cats. You have cat breeds, cat foods, cat toys. I
Yes.
mean, and so talk to me about how you actually organize your blog around that topical map.
Yeah, definitely. So I like to work in Google Sheets, and Microsoft Excel is the same thing. And that's always where I start before I move over to the blog. So we have cat as the main topic. Then we have subtopics, which are cat breeds. We have the food, the toys, and then we have the subtopics, which are different types of foods, different types of toys. And often we have also a general category. And that's like the big overview. Then I take a subtopic and then I do keyword research on that subtopic. And then I often get hundreds of different keywords to write content about. And the same way that I organize my topical map is the same way that I organize the blog. So within a blog, you have categories, and those categories are your topics. So that's the cat breeds, we have the cat food, cat toys, and then within those high levels of categories, we have subcategories, which are then the types of breeds, we have the types of toys, and that's basically how I organize blogs.
Okay, so what about the actual blog post? Is there, now back in the day when I was blogging regularly for SEO, which was 10 years ago, I don't do it anymore. I had a formula. Like I had a specific formula, and every single one of my blog posts followed the same formula. Is there a formula today, or is that not a good idea, or?
You can have like some overview points that you want to cover, but it always depends on the search results. So what is already ranking in the search results, sorry, and then you basically make an outline based on that. So what I like to do is that let's say that I needed to write about a specific cat toy. I wanted to review that. Then I would search for that specific cat toy, and then I would take the first 3 to 5 results in Google, and then I would see what have they written about, what topics did they cover, how did they test it. And then I would basically make a superset of headings. And then I would know, okay, I need to cover the majority of these topics that I find relevant and interesting. And then I build out my blog based on that, my blog post, sorry. That's the way to do it. And that's why you can't really go take one way and then do all of your different blog posts. It really depends on what people are already writing about and what the specific topic is.
Man, this is complicated. It used to be so much easier. So, there
Yeah.
is some benefit to hiring somebody else to do it. So basically what I'm hearing is that if you are a solopreneur or micropreneur or somebody's in a small business and it's just you doing it, the simpler you keep it, the better. Right?
Definitely, yeah.
I mean,
Definitely.
just the I keep telling people you got to narrow your niche. The riches are in the niches, especially if you're a micropreneur. And a lot of people are like, well, I can help anybody. My favorite back in the day, I used to network with a woman who sold a skincare product, and she would say, my ideal client is anybody with skin.
Oh.
You know, and like, okay. So, you know, I like to talk about how in our custom furniture business, our ideal client had two homes. One of them was in the city. One of them was the country. They drove an electric car. They collected antique furniture. They loved, you know, I had this whole list of things that my ideal client had. And I catered everything that I talked about, everything, the colors of our website, everything would appeal to that person. And, you know, I had one singular person in mind. You know, I knew what she did. I knew everything about her. And that's who I wrote for. And that, I mean, we had a fantastic business. I mean, we still have people contacting us regularly asking if we'll build furniture for them. And, you know, the answer is usually no. But, you know, but I was really specific because it was, you know, at the highlight of our career, we had 8 people working in the company, 6 employees, and then my husband and I. But, you know, we were never, never anything more than a small business. Right. And I just kept it as niche as I possibly could. And that works. It really, and it works today better than it did then, because back then there was not as much competition as there is today. So if you are a small business owner, you're going to be tempted to do all these things. Right. But the simpler you keep it, the better. Do you want to add to that, Philip?
Absolutely. It's always easier to scale up, to expand, than to, after a while, like scale down. And also, I found it's much easier when you write content, when you have that person in mind that you're writing towards. It's just much easier in the way that you communicate yourself, whether it's through emails or content. You always think about that person. You feel that you're writing directly to that person. It makes everything so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to the tools. List your favorite tools that you use for SEO that are free or low cost.
Okay. So Google Search Console is my absolute favorite. It's the one that I spend most time in, and it's completely free to use. And let me think what else. I like to use a tool called Phrase to write my content in. And Phrase is also super cheap. I think you can get started for $15 or something per month. And Phrase is incredible at researching for you. So when you need to write a piece of content, then you will go into Phrase and you will enter the keyword that you're writing content for. And then Phrase will go to Google for you, search the term, and find all the research that you need. It's incredible.
I have never even heard of this tool.
No, it's so good.
You've already taught me 2 things I didn't know, Sora and Phrase. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Is it spelled Phrase?
No, Phrase.io.
Phrase.io.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. All right. Exactly. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. So it's basic. If you can imagine, you have your text editor on the left, and then you have all your research on the right, where you can see what people are writing about, what results are there from Google on this specific keyword, what are all the headings used, what are people asking, like all the questions from Quora, Reddit, from Google also. So it's basically everything in one view, and that makes Phrase incredible. That's why it's my favorite, even though I've tried probably 10, 15 different content optimization tools.
And it is it's an AI tool again.
Yeah,
how long has this tool been out?
Oh, it's been out for 4 or 5 years, maybe. Yeah, something like that.
Oh, okay. So it's been around for a while. Wow.
It has, definitely.
I can't believe that I've never heard of it before, because usually I know about all the tools because I interview so many people and I ask them the same, you know, subset of questions.
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah.
So we are getting to the point where we need to start wrapping up. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to talk about?
Oh, there's so many things we could talk about, but I think we've been around. Like, if you should do one thing with your website today, then sign up for Google Search Console. That's the thing that I always tell people. It's free, and you get so much valuable data in there.
So don't end the day today if you do not already have Google Search Console. Do not end the day without Google Search Console. Okay. And Google Search Console is pretty intuitive and easy to use.
It is, yeah. It's super simple.
Like, how often do you actually go in there? Like, every time you want to write an article, or do you ever just check on it to see how your site's doing?
I'm there every single day, multiple times per day. Yeah, I'm an addict to Google Search Console. It's incredible. And I think, like, if I need to give my favorite use case with the Google Search Console, it's when, let's say that I release a piece of content today, then I would go back to Google Search Console in 30 days and look at that piece of content. And then I would see all the keywords that this piece of content is ranking for, but where I get no clicks. That means that I need to optimize my content further for all those keywords to get more clicks. So yeah, that's my favorite use case.
So you can rewrite the article. So how often are you posting content to your blog?
Oh, it varies. Sometimes 5-6 times per week, other times 3 times per week. I try to at least like a couple of times per week, I try to publish some new content or optimize some older content.
And optimizing older content is still a good idea.
For sure it is. There's
Go ahead.
Google basically gives your entire website a score. So it takes all of your content pieces and then it gives a broad score. They will not admit this, but it's been proven over and over again. And every time you have an outdated piece of content, that's an unhelpful piece of content and that drags your score down. So that's why it's so valuable to go back in time and optimize your content piece. That's also why there's so many websites that are deleting old content because it's hurting their score. So they're just deleting because they know they can't optimize it. And it's much better to delete so you don't have any unhelpful content than to have some outdated content on your website.
So how do you, again, for the listener, how do you determine whether or not you need to delete content that's on your site now?
Usually within my industry, I can let content sit for a year or so. 10-12 months. It really depends on the industry, but I can let it sit for 10-12 months. And after that, then I come back to it and then I say, okay, is this still relevant? For example, I have a lot of tool reviews. Okay, is the tool still active? If it's not active, easily I delete the piece of content. If I can see that this is just not relevant anymore in the SEO industry, then I simply delete it. Other times, then I will merge it with some other piece of content because they've made some changes in the SEO industry, and then some other piece of content are not relevant either. So it really depends. It depends on the industry and it depends on what's happening. And I think it just varies because you always need to ask yourself whether it's still relevant. And if it's relevant, then optimize it. If you can't optimize it and you can't see yourself optimize it within a couple of months, then you need to really figure out whether you want to delete it or not. That's difficult to answer.
You could also just turn it off, you know, put it back in drafts instead of making it live. That's an interesting point, especially if your website is as old as mine is and has content that's over decades old, right? So is there a way to find, like in Google Search Console, can you go in and say which of my blog posts have zero, you know, are ranked, you know, which of my blog posts should I delete? Is there a way to figure that out? Is there a tool for that?
Yeah, definitely. So what you can do in Google Search Console is that you can compare periods. So you can go into Google Search Console, then you can compare, let's say, the last 6 months to the 6 months prior to that. And if you can see that there is a huge drop off and you're getting no clicks, then it's time to either optimize it or to delete it. That's the best way of doing it. It's called content decay. That's what it's called. Yeah.
So you basically have to check that page by page. You're not going to get a report that says these pages on your site have zero clicks. You have to actually manually.
Yeah. Using Google Search Console, you have to. I haven't found a tool that I can strongly recommend using for content decay, because everyone just recommends using Google Search Console, even though it's a bit of a tedious process sometimes.
All right, dude. If you ever find that tool, will you please circle back with me and let me know?
For sure. I might build it myself. Who knows?
Hey, I mean, it seems to me like it's a tool that's needed.
Yeah, it is.
There's your next million-dollar idea. I swear, I have been giving away million-dollar ideas lately.
That's amazing.
I don't need to go into it, but the last couple of weeks, I every once in a while, I'll just say, dude, this is what you need to do. And it's like, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. If you don't do that, somebody else is going to do it. So I'm telling you, Philip, if you don't do this, somebody else is going to do it. So
maybe I will happily pay for it.
I love it. All right. We're at your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
Oh, I'm most grateful for my girlfriend, I would say. She is just the most supportive in everything that I do. And she's the one behind everything, behind the scenes.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Solely. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for all the groovy ways to connect with our guest, Philip Stemmen. I've been your host, Candace Rudardi. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy.